Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up, whether it's routine or difficult, they handle it all, and they're always looking for new technicians as well. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And we get the show rolling right out of the gate. Greg Pickle, who does a great job for On3.com, Blue White Illustrated, joins us. Greg, welcome back to the show. It's always a great pleasure.
Steve, it's always great to be on with you. Happy traditional National Signing Day, which of course means nothing to Penn State this year and pretty much no one else across the country, but it is the traditional National Signing Day today. Of course, Penn State already signed a very talented class of 2024. But, yeah, it's good to be back with you as always.
Yeah, in fact, I was listening to an interview with Sonny Dykes today, and they asked the TCU coach, and they asked him, he said, you know, what was today like? He says, well, we sort of just went through our winter workout and got ready for the upcoming season. He said, we didn't sign anybody. So like, he said, we already took care of that. Let's start with wrestling. Let's have a little fun with that, because the best program in America is going to wrestle at what used to be, decades ago, the best program in America, Iowa. When you look at, I thought Ohio State wrestled hard on Friday night against Penn State. It ended up being 28-9. What was your thought in watching Penn State win 8 out of 10 in that one?
Yeah, I was impressed with what Tom Ryan, head coach of the Buckeyes in Ohio State, brought to Rec Hall. That was a good match. Penn State, of course, as you know, ended up winning pretty convincingly and was never really threatened in terms of the actual dual meet score itself. But Ohio State came to wrestle, and Penn State got some good prep for not only Iowa, but, of course, the upcoming tournaments, being the Big Ten and the NCAA individual tournaments in March as well. So I thought that was a great opportunity for Penn State, which didn't have as many dual meets as some of its peers nationally this year, to get kind of the feet thrown in the fire a little bit, have some close matches, need to make some scoring moves late to get the job done in some individual matches. It ultimately led to that final score being a bit wider in terms of margin than maybe what the actual match itself looked like if you watched it bout to bout from 125 through heavyweight. So, yeah, I thought Ohio State wrestled very well. I think Penn State, both from the, in the two matches it lost, 133 pounds, Aaron DeGal lost, and Bernie Truex, the first-year Nittany Lion as well, got pinned at 184. I think both of those guys will learn from that and certainly grow from those moments. But I think even the guys that won will experience that as well and take some things away from their matches that maybe didn't cause them to lose this time around, but could either cause them to lose in the future or allow matches to stay closer than longer than they need to. So overall, it was a good opportunity for Penn State, a good win, of course, the 52nd in a row from them in a dual meet setting. And now, as you know, it's on to Iowa this weekend.
So let's talk about Truex for a moment. How stunned was the building when that happened? Because, I mean, we were at Indiana at the time watching on TV.
Yeah, I mean, you could see his opponent, and I don't want to mispronounce his name, so I'm not even going to try, but, his opponent was definitely a guy, has been and will continue to be a guy that will look for throws, look for pinning combinations, and he was kind of setting it up a little bit and looking for an opportunity, and he found one and threw Truex to his back, and that was kind of that. It happens in the sport of wrestling, and it certainly is something Penn State wrestlers have done almost at will in a lot of cases during the Cale Sanderson era, but sometimes they find themselves on the other end of that coin, and Bernie Truex certainly did. So clearly that's something he wanted to do, come out and lose and get pinned during one of the few chances he's had so far to wrestle at Rec Hall. So, you know, he'll learn from that too. But no, the building was stunned. There's no question. I think that he was stunned. The coaching staff was sitting on the bench surprised, and so was certainly everybody there watching the match, no matter who they were rooting for or covering or so on and so forth. So, yeah, certainly a surprising outcome. But, you know, again, sometimes these guys end up in positions that they did not intend to, and when they do, there's not much they can do about it, and that's where he found himself last Friday night.
Bo Bartlett is a veteran. He has now ascended to number one based on the events of last week. Where is he better? And with the experience, where is he better?
Yeah, so if you're not a longtime Penn State wrestling fan, Bo Bartlett, of course, started his career at 149 because there was this monster in his way named Nick Lee, who, of course, is now thriving at the international level and looking for a spot on the U.S. Olympic team for Paris. But when he moved down to 141 last year, certainly it got him to the weight class that he was meant to be in. I think he learned a lot last year and maybe learned some lessons that even in winning and even in losing, he wasn't able to learn at 149 simply because it wasn't the preferred weight class for him. So we saw him get better and better throughout last season, and it's continued this year. As you mentioned, Real Woods, the now number two wrestler from Iowa, he beat Bo Bartlett 4-1 last year when Iowa and Penn State met in a dual meet in 2023. And, you know, he lost against Michigan as Iowa got stunned and upset by Michigan in the dual meet setting last weekend. Real Woods lost as well. So
that moved Bo Bartlett up to number one. He got crushed 14-2.
Right. Yes, yeah. It was, again, kind of almost similar to Bernie Truex, not necessarily exactly the same, of course, because one resulted in a pin and one did not. But if you go and watch that match, Real Woods just didn't have much of anything for his opponent in that match and just kind of found himself endlessly on the wrong part of the mat and so on and so forth. So, yeah, that would, you would think, make Bo Bartlett a favorite going into this match in Carver-Hawkeye Arena. But I would just note that, you know, wrestling's a little bit different, of course, than a lot of other sports where you lose one match and it's not necessarily the start of a losing streak. And a lot of these guys, right, especially in this 1-2 setting like we have with Bartlett and Woods, are not used to losing, and they don't take it very well. So I expect that to be a very close match. Bo Bartlett tends to find himself in some closer matches against the top competitions, which is per the usual at the NCAA level. So I expect that match to be close, and I think even despite the results of last week, that bout could certainly still go either way. It's one of a couple that, while Penn State will be favored in, you know, no one's going to be shocked if they end up on the wrong side of the scoreboard.
Well, it's all about matchups and styles. I mean, that's a big part of it, the style of the guy versus the style you have. Penn State was able to solve its 149 doing it the old-fashioned way, a Matt Town 2. What has that meant to the lineup that it worked out that way?
Yeah, so I think Tyler Kasak's obviously a freshman who has shown a ton of potential. When Penn State started the year, it never expected to have to fill its 149-pound slot via competition in season. But with Shane Van Ness, the returning All-American, suffered an injury back in the 2023 portion of the season. I think it was in December, late November or December, that caused him to get surgery and miss the remainder of the year. Suddenly, Penn State had an open lineup spot that it wasn't expecting to fill. And, I mean, I think it speaks to the depth of this program, Steve. A guy like junior David Evans can go in and compete with freshman Tyler Kasak, and it was a legitimate competition. And, you know, obviously, I think Kasak's the more decorated wrestler of the two, certainly at the prep level. But Evans is someone that can hold his own and can have success, as we saw in the January two dual meets that he wrestled, picking up wins. So a very talented guy as well. But Kasak's now edged him head-to-head twice, once at 141, once at 149 at tournaments. Certainly they've been wrestling in the room as well, and he was able to obviously get an edge that puts him in the lineup, one of two true freshmen for Penn State to start this year. So it solidifies that spot, and he's a guy that continues to climb the rankings. I believe he is in the top 10 now across the board at Intermat. They have him at number 10. And so he is another Penn State wrestler that, despite his age, is going to fight for All-American honors and points scoring team-wise at nationals.
Aaron Brooks has made the move from 184 to 197. That's all new, for the most part. It's all new competition, all new styles, different scouting reports, and so forth. Is he getting enough credit for what he's doing right now because he made the switch? Because it's like with him, people just assume he's going to win.
Yeah, it's funny because if you talk to people who follow the sport casually, then I'm not even sure how many realize he necessarily bumped up. It's just kind of assumed that you look at the box score or you hear about the match and, oh, yeah, Aaron Brooks won again. Oh, yeah, Aaron Brooks scored another victory. But you're right. He's wrestling up a weight class. He looks very good, very fit and natural at that weight class. So there's no physical issues there, which, of course, if there were, Cale Sanderson wouldn't have bumped him there. But, no, I think you make a good point that after running through so much talented competition at a lighter weight, he's now bumped up and he's controlling competition and taking care of business just like, you know, a guy who wrestled in that weight class all of his life. And at some, you know, some point there is the fact that, whether he's wrestling at 184 or 197, the natural talent he has and the ability he has to see things and score points because of that is elite and obviously at a world-class level. So it's partly that and also partly just he embraced the chance to wrestle at a bigger weight, and maybe that's a little bit easier for him in terms of not having to cut so often and so on and so forth. And he's thriving. So I certainly don't know if it may be an underrated part of this team in terms of the success he's having despite bumping up and, you know, continuing to do what he's always done, even though he's at a higher weight class.
I want to talk about Iowa for a moment. I just went to Indiana to do basketball. And when you're standing there and you're looking up at the banners that they have in the end zone, the one thing you notice right away is, yeah, there have been a lot of championships. But Indiana basketball has 3 Big Ten championships in the last 32 years, okay? Not great for what they do. The fan base is not happy. They haven't had a Big Ten title since 2016. Iowa, which dominated this sport for decades, let's be honest, they're not close. They're not close. They're very good, but they are not close. They've had, one national title in the last, 15 years, whatever the number happens to be. How do you view Iowa, and how do you think Iowa fans view Iowa?
I think Iowa fans, by and large, are pretty frustrated. I mean, they see year in and year out the fact that the gap between them and Penn State, there are some other teams that are probably more on a level playing field with Iowa than there ever was before. It's a great season for college wrestling. I'll just go abstract here, you know, big picture here, and then get back to your question. But, I mean, it's a fantastic season for college wrestling. Outside of, obviously, Penn State is number one and far away the best program in the country. But, I mean, it is a legitimate question that who is going to be number two, who is going to be number three, four, and five. Not just during regular season, but also once you get to the tournaments. There is a lot of good wrestling going on. But, you know, to answer your point, I think that that's what probably has Iowa fans frustrated, is that more so than them closing the gap on Penn State, the gap behind Iowa has really closed significantly, with a few other programs really doing a nice job over the years developing. And a lot of them are familiar names, Oklahoma State, of course, being one of them. But I think that's, where the level of frustration is probably most felt for Iowa fans, is that, you know, instead of making a leap forward, they're kind of just staying the same and having other schools catch up to them. So, yeah, I agree with you. They're not really close. Obviously, the investigation with the student-athlete gambling stuff at Iowa and Iowa State derailed their lineup this year. Where that all goes and ends up, who knows. But at the end of the day, yeah, this lineup they have out there this year, it is not full strength for them. And even if, you know, they had those guys, I don't think they would seriously be challenging Penn State in the team race this year. But, yeah, they have, you know, Tom Brands, a very good legendary head coach who's been there a long time. And it's a good program. I mean, let's be honest, it's a very good program, one of the best in the sport and in the country. But, yeah, they have not closed the gap of late. Penn State continues to widen it. And part of that is just the recruiting prowess of Penn State. You look at the lineup this year. I mean, you have 2 freshmen now starting in. And again, without Shane Van Ness getting hurt, you wouldn't have Tyler Kasak at 149. But that's, you have Braden Davis, a 4-time Michigan State champ, at 125. You have transfers in the lineup. You have guys you developed in the lineup. It's balanced. And that's, as we all know, what you have to do in most college sports these days, is you have to be able to balance developing your returners, finding impact players or wrestlers in the transfer portal, and getting guys from the high school ranks that can contribute early. And Cale Sanderson and co. have done all of that, and it's why they continue to widen the gap across the sport at the college level.
All right, so again, big picture. No offense to collegiate wrestling, but there's nowhere to go. I mean, you can get to the world stage. There's nowhere to go. There's no NBA, no NFL. What has the COVID year meant to the depth of the sport? And is there concern 2 years from now about the depth of the sport, because you won't have the older COVID year?
That's a good question. There's definitely to some programs, Iowa being one of them, you have more guys hanging around than at others. Some programs have seen their guys graduate and just get ready for the world stage because they can still compete and not have to worry about the school side of things. So, yeah, it's a great question, Steve. I'm not sure I'm ready yet to dive into how much in 2 years that things could, you know, potentially, I guess you could say, bottom out or change significantly. But I would also say there's a lot of young talent in the sport. So I do think that you could have some, just from an overall depth perspective, some change and maybe a lowering of the level from a total perspective. But I look across the sport and I see a lot of guys who are not going to have that COVID year at their disposal, who are going to be the stars of the sport, both at Penn State and elsewhere, when you start talking about 2025, 2026, 2027, so on and so forth. But you're right that, you know, in wrestling, unlike other sports, there is nowhere to go. So you will see more guys consider that COVID year if they can make it work with their program, if they want to take it, because unless they're competing at the world stage, you know, once they're done at the college level, that's that.
A lot of tickets have been sold for Monday night, but what's your read? Is that a sellout Monday night in the Jordan Center with Rutgers, or are there still tickets available?
As far as I can tell, there are still tickets available. I was looking at Ticketmaster recently, and there were plenty of upper deck seating available. I would guess that's probably going to be the case through the weekend and into Monday. Rutgers are going to bring a very good team into State College. There's no doubt about that. Are there as many top five and top ten bouts on the card as there are for both the Ohio State match last Friday night and the Iowa match this Friday? Absolutely not. Will it be a competitive match? So, yeah, I think so. Certainly. Not to the level of some of the BJC Penn State wrestling opponents have been, but should be a good match. I would be surprised if every ticket in the building was sold out prior to match night on Monday night. You're right, they have sold a good bit of tickets, but if you just look around on the secondary sites, there's certainly plenty out there to be had.
So when they announced it was Rutgers on a Monday night, were you surprised?
Yes. Oh, there's no question. And, you know, Kale Sanderson was asked about that at his first media availability back in November, and I don't have the quote exactly in front of me, but basically from the sounds of it, by the time the Big Ten wrestling schedule came out, the Bryce Jordan Center was otherwise booked up with other events, be it athletic ones or otherwise, and so this was kind of the match they were left with to you know, get a Bryce Jordan Center dual meet in this year. You know, but I think it's interesting to have a different opponent in there. I also just think, as is well documented, Steve, that Monday night, weeknight, anything at the Bryce Jordan Center in State College can be tough to get people out to, especially ones that don't live in State College, Center County, and so on and so forth. So I think that's probably why you're seeing, obviously, tickets available for this match compared to what it would usually be for the Bryce Jordan Center match. But, yeah, certainly surprised me when that popped up, but it also sounded like it may have just been a scheduling quirk that was not avoidable.
Right, because, I mean, Monday night, anything in this area is difficult. I mean, it just is.
Right.
I mean, it's just a fact of life. Greg, absolute pleasure as always. Thanks so much for the great information. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Steve. Talk to you soon.
Greg Pickle on 3.com, Blue White Illustrated. Boys, a lot of Penn State, Iowa this week. Men's basketball at 7 tomorrow night, then the Lady Lions at Caitlin Clark and Iowa right after that at 9 o'clock. They're both on BTN. And then Friday night, Penn State, Iowa wrestling at 9 o'clock at Carver Hawkeye. It's when you've had the success that Iowa's had, which is tremendous, it is hard for a fan base to accept what used to be. I saw that at Indiana. Indiana's still good. I mean, last night they were down 18 and Ohio State came all the way back and won. Great win for them. But they're still, while an upper-level Big Ten team, the reality is they're not a conference contender. That's tough for any fan base to accept. And in wrestling, there is one top dog and only one in that category. It's Penn State. Iowa, right? The view hasn't changed for them in over a decade.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Wednesday. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department, great technicians, real pros. They have more business than ever, so they're looking for more technicians. So think about that. Great people to work for and with. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Okay. Interesting times with Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey, who are the commissioners of the Big Ten and the SEC, respectively, combining forces to take a look at college athletics. There's a lot of elements they want to look at. One, of course, is the college football playoff. College football playoff goes to 12, but right now it's the six top conference champions, automatic bids, in terms of the ranking. So those six would get in automatically, and then six at-large teams. Realistically, they want to change it to 7-5. The problem is, in order to do it over this two-year contract that remains, there's 2 years remaining on the contract, is that you have to have a unanimous vote. Well, guess who's holding it up? The Pac-12 is holding it up. Well, there are only two teams in the Pac-12, Washington State and Oregon State. That's it. Okay? Like two teams. I mean, there are times you just want to look at people and just say, will you just get out of the way? But the rules are the rules. So that's what's holding that up right now. That's something that they're discussing. But they're also, when you have about 70% of the television money and you have 15 of the top 18 television brands within your two conferences, you're the ones that can sit there and talk about NIL. You're the ones that can sit there and talk about transfer portal and so forth because you're the powerful brands. Now, does the NCAA still have a role, Todd? And in my opinion, yes, and here's why on two fronts, and I want to know what you think about this. The NCAA still does, to its credit, and they have nothing to do with the college football playoff, but everything else, they do a very good job of running championships, which is a pain in the neck. And they still are doing something that conferences don't really want to do, and that's the enforcement part. So is there still a role somewhere for the NCAA? Maybe, because of those two fronts. What do you think?
In the general fact of Division II and Division III, I think there's a general role for the NCAA, but I think they've made themselves irrelevant at the upper reaches of college sports just by, like we've talked a lot about, sticking their head in the sand and not being willing to take a chance to make rules in this. And how long are we into the transfer portal that, the Big Ten and the SEC just finally decided to take matters into their own hands because, the NCAA certainly isn't doing it.
Right, exactly. Again, I still think they have a role to play when it comes to running championships, which they're very good at, by the way. They don't get enough credit for being very, because running championships are not easy. They do a good job of it. And they still have an enforcement arm that we have doubts about at times, but still, they still have that role. And then the question, because the conferences don't want to take that on. Yeah, they'd rather have somebody else be the bad guy and tell you you're wrong. That's just me.
it's a sense that the conferences have to see everybody every day, and the NCAA doesn't, in a sense.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, Buck Showalter, most recently the manager of the New York Mets, sounded off in an appearance on Foul Territory. I think that's the Suits pregame show, isn't it? No? Wrong about that? Okay.
Wrong kind of foul.
Okay, yeah. Mocked the load management concept in sports. He said, quote, "It's funny how guys get penalized now for playing too much. First thing I look up in the column is games played. Do you post up? I mean, do you post up? And these guys posted up." He was talking about Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, the two players he used to manage. He says, they're very hard to find nowadays. I love when those guys come in about their load management, referring to members of the front office. We had a guy get a triple and two doubles, and they came in and said he probably needs the day off because he ran too much around the bases last night. So what do you want me to tell him? Don't get any hits so you can play the next day? I didn't quite understand that. I said, okay, you guys go out there and you tell Brandon Nimmo that he's not playing today because he did too well last night. Showalter and New York parted ways after a disastrous season for the Mets 1 year after being named the National League Manager of the Year. Of course, Carlos Mendoza, the former Yankees bench coach, is now their new manager. While Showalter doesn't appear to be fond of load management, the veteran manager said that he was receptive to the analytics of the game. They present a lot of things to you, but sometimes it's a lot different in the dugout in the eighth and ninth inning. When you know what's going on mentally with a guy, emotionally with a guy, you know things are going on both on and off the field. So there are many factors that figure into it. So the best guys I've dealt with are receptive to the other part of it. They bring something I can't bring, but the coaching staff brings something that they can't bring, just from your experience. So the best organizations, like Texas, I think you saw a great example. Their general manager went to an Ivy League school, but he played the game. And their manager, Bruce Bochy, there's a great relationship there. In other words, great respect. Right? I find that interesting. You need to have, we've talked about the analytics thing 1,000 times. You have to have it. I mean, discarding information is always a bad way to go. You need to have as much information as possible, but then it's what you do with it afterward, how you decide to use it, to what extent. Maybe it's a lot, maybe on a particular night it's a little. The really good ones are the ones that, to me, are the ones that have the ability to take that information, utilize it where need be, but you know what? My gut's telling me I got to do something else. I just got a feeling. And you know what? Sometimes that's not always right either. But like, I respect that when somebody says, my instinct tells me I've got to go this direction. Because I'm telling you, more often than not, that works. Especially when you're going against a team that is strictly by the numbers. The team that goes strictly by the numbers gets thrown off by teams that instinctively try something that's different, and it's from a gut. They get thrown off by it. Like, well, that's not what the numbers say. Yeah, you're right. That's not what the numbers say. But you do need to have all that information available to you. And there are some days where you're gonna utilize it, use it, make decisions because of it, and they're the right decisions on that day. That's fine. But there's going to be another day where you're sitting there like going, you know what? I've watched how this played out. And I watched how it played out last night. And my gut says, this matchup of him versus him, that works for us. Let's go. Right? They've got a different catcher out there tonight. he doesn't throw as well as the guy last night. I'm going to steal a base. Well, analytics says you shouldn't be stealing. No, we're going to steal a base here. I'm going to get the runner in scoring position. We're going to move him over with a bunt. We've got a chance to win here. Or, because I've got somebody at the plate that can bunt. If I got somebody at the plate that can't, we are not bunting. We don't make the guy do what he can't do, or he's not good at.
Did you see that they ask Alex Anzalone about Dan Campbell's fourth down stuff? I believe I saw.
No, I did not. I did not. What did he say?
He was more surprised that they kicked the field goal at the end of the half than any time that they went for it in the second half. It's just the way they play.
Right, because they actually asked Dan Campbell about the decision at the end of the first half, and he said he came very close to going for it, and he thought, no, it's the end of the half. Let's get the points here, because I think they were the 7-8 yard line.
Yeah,
yeah. He says because they were at the 7 or 8, right in that neighborhood, and it was the end of the half, he thought I should get the points here. Because was it Aaron? Aaron Andrews asked him that question?
I believe it might have been that Sue was on the sideline that night.
Right. Now she was relating what he said, but evidently he came very close to going for it.
Well, I'll be honest, I was a little surprised that just the couple times I saw them play, I was surprised he kicked the field goal there.
I wasn't, only because if it was inside the 5, I think he would have gone for it, and I would not have been surprised by it. But because it was outside the 5, and you got one shot at it, again, see, when that something like that happens, all right, I'm on the 1 yard line. I've got one play, or maybe let's stretch it to 1.5 yards. I can still run the ball there. It's the last play. So I've got all my options available, and the defense knows I have all my options available, right? So they're going to sit there and, like, the guys are supposed to play pass due, the guys are supposed to play run due, but not everybody's thinking the same thing. At the 7-yard line, I've got everybody thinking it's a pass. And I think that enters into, okay, like, what are they, not as much as what we're thinking, what are they thinking? Well, if I'm at the 7-yard line with one play, am I running the ball there?
No.
In all likelihood, it doesn't mean I can't, but in all likelihood, right, I'm going to throw the ball, which means they're thinking I'm going to run the ball. I mean, I'm going to throw the ball. I mean, if I'm looking at them and they're thinking that way, and I have made myself in that situation one-dimensional, that sways my decision from that far out.
Well, you also know you probably have to throw it into the end zone at that point, too, so it's
right.
Only 10 yards to defend rather than the all 17.
Great point, and here's the other part. I might go for it in that situation, maybe. I probably, in all likelihood, I would have taken the points if I'm the team getting the ball to start the second half. But I'm not the team getting the ball to start the second half. San Francisco is. I'll take the points. If I'm the team getting the ball to start the second half, I might take a chance. See, I think, there's... See all the different elements that enter into a decision like that? It's not as simple as, we're gone! Although sometimes it does seem that way.
We're gone! The way we discussed it was longer than the 40 seconds that they have to make that decision, too.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And I can't remember if they had a timeout or not. But still. New numbers for Penn State football players. Now, remember that there can be number changes at the end of a semester coming up. The way James does it is that you have to achieve a certain grade point average at the end of the spring, and you can change numbers. Okay? Just so people know, that's how things work here. Julian Fleming is going to wear number 3. Nolan Rucci, 72. The place kicker, Chase Meyer, will get 91. Jordan Meyer, the defensive lineman from Wisconsin, 95. A.J. Harris, the corner from Georgia, gets number 4. Jalen Kimber, the corner from Florida, gets number 3. Among the freshmen, Ethan Grunkemeyer, 17, quarterback. Running back Quentin Martin gets 25. Wide receiver Josiah Brown gets 19. Tight end Luke Reynolds gets 85. Egan Boyer, offensive lineman, 64. Cooper Cousins, number 50. Garrett Sexton, 70. Liam Andrews, the defensive lineman, 90. DeAndre Cook, defensive lineman, 94. Jalen Harvey, the defensive end, gets 44. Defensive lineman T.A. Cunningham gets 97. Xavier Gillen, the defensive lineman, gets 54. Kerry Jackson, the linebacker, gets number 30. John Mitchell gets number 12 at corner. Right? You're asking yourself, now, whoa, wait a minute. I thought Tracy wears 12. We'll get to that in a second. Corner Antoine Belgrave Shorter gets 23. Bebu Toure gets 21, the safety. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. Isn't that the number of K.J. Winston? Long snapper Andrew DeFault gets 92. Linebacker Beckham D gets 37. Wide receiver Logan Cunningham gets 31. Now, my understanding is this, is that if K.J. Winston stays on the path that he is on academically, he might be switching to number 2 after the spring, okay? And Zion Tracy, who currently wears 12, and John Mitchell's going to wear 12, if he continues on his path, then he would be allowed to switch, and he might go to number 7. Just throwing that out there. Throwing it out there. So that people know what the possibilities are. But again, here, okay, here, just so people know, you have to stay on a certain academic path to then open the door to give you the opportunity to change your number. That's how it works.
It's going to take a little getting used to see Julian Fleming in the number 3.
Yeah, I know, but you know what? I mean, Malik Mega's still here.
Yeah.
And Malik Mega's already switched. And Mega was a captain last year. He's number 4. And that's, you know, that's, you know, in the end, technically, in this, Julian's the newcomer, and the veteran captain is the older is the guy that has the number. He makes a couple of catches out of the gate, which he will. You'll get used to seeing him in number 3 fast enough. How about that?
Yeah, I assumed as much.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, I'm going to get to a morning workout soon. It's not going to be this week. I mean, they've had 2 of them so far. There'll be a point either next week or the week after, I'll get to a morning workout and just get an idea and just get a read on how things are going over there with guys. Okay? But I haven't had a chance to do that yet. Especially after last week, being on the road, you know, leaving Tuesday for New Jersey, doing the game at Rutgers, went halfway back after the game, got to the, halfway back, I got to the hotel at 1:30 in the morning. Bowman, I was up at 7:30 and I was out of there by 8:15 to get back here. And then Friday morning, so I'm back here Thursday morning. Friday morning, boom, I'm on the plane going to Indiana, did that game, flew back. So I'm just kind of like this week, like, you, Steve is not going in at 6 a.m. okay? to see the first couple of workouts of the year. I will get to one of the workouts either next week or the week after. How about that? Okay. And every year I go. I usually go to a couple every year. So I'll get to a couple before it's all said and done. And on this show, there's mostly a lot more said than done. All right. We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Andy Reid said that running back Jerick McKinnon says it's slim for him to be in the game, that he's right now not practicing, and neither is left guard Joe Tooney. They say Tooney's a long shot. McKinnon is a long shot for the game. They're not sure about Kadarius Toney, but that's on every front. And Chip Kelly, again, because Penn State hosts UCLA this year, October 5th in Beaver Stadium. Chip Kelly has already talked with the Raiders, got bypassed there, but now it looks like he's talking about being the offensive coordinator at Seattle. Very interesting.
Does not excite me in the least. I feel like Cotrillo when I saw the Chip Kelly news to Seattle last night.
Nobody feels like Cotrillo.
Well, Chip Kelly to Seattle might get me wound up. Well, maybe not, but close to it.
Nobody brings that level of angst and anger in combination like Cotrillo does.
Well,
You may have angst, you may have anger, but he brings the combination of the two together unlike any other human on the planet.
You're not wrong.
That's the key to the show.